your work life, your relationships, your money, your health, the meaning of life. Welcome to How to Do Life with Marty Nemko.
Hi, I'm Marty Nemko. I am, like many people, profoundly sad about what's happened with regard to George Floyd and the aftermath, and as well COVID, and as well as the response to COVID. But I think it's important, with all of the millions of talking heads pontificating about it, that I mind my knitting and stay with what I know best, because not everything is a political statement. So I'm going to be I'm going to talk about career stuff, and I've gotten a couple of questions from that synthesize what many people are suffering in the time of COVID, and I want to try to take a shot at giving a thorough answer, because one of the beauties of radio is that I don't have to give a soundbite, and so this is going to be I'm going to devote the entire 28, 29 minutes, whatever, to providing a thorough answer around the following two questions. And the first one is, dear Dr. Nemko, 42 million people lost their jobs with the COVID shutdown. Are there pockets of hiring? I'm going to answer that first. And then if we have time afterwards, this is a longer question. With millions of people losing their job, the job market's terrible. I need a job, but my work history is unlikely to make me the winning candidate against zillions of applicants. Let me tell you my work history. I lost my job as a fundraising assistant, then chose to be a stay-at-home parent and volunteer activist. But my parents are no longer willing to support me. I'm 31, so I need to look for a job. Is it possible to massage my work history so I get a job over all the other people who have a better work history? So I'll do that later, but let's start with that first question. Again, it was 42 million people have already lost their jobs with the COVID shutdown. Are there pockets of hiring? So I did prepare for this. So I have about a dozen areas that I think are the most likely pockets of opportunity in the era of COVID. First, large employers. Unfortunately, tons of small businesses, especially moms and pops, from restaurants to retail, to even small businesses serving business or nonprofits or government, are going to go out of business. So many, many of my job seekers, especially in these roiling times, are looking for stability. And so from where I sit, your best shot, for better or worse, and this is, I think, an unintended consequence of all of the governmental and activist efforts, it's, you know, they never thought they'd be ending up benefiting large employers, but they're the only ones with the deep enough pockets to sustain through the likely fairly long-term or even very long-term economic decline that came from the COVID shutdown. So I know many listeners to podcasts that are in the Bay Area, or the radio station, public radio here, KSFP, are loath to work for corporations. So I want to talk about one that maybe that is clearly not going out of business and is clearly, at least relatively speaking, would seem to be not offensive to many people with Bay Area values, and that is Procter & Gamble. Procter & Gamble makes the essentials, and indeed, in a time of economic slowdown, the basics are what people are going to be buying. And it's, in my judgment, one of the key vectors facing that society will be experiencing is that Democrats are going to win big in November, both the presidency, both sides of Congress, and here in California, strengthening the Democratic majorities in the Senate. And the assembly. So with that true, they have all committed to trying to be tougher on corporations. We will probably have some version of national health care. which will be put on largely, who knows exactly how much, but significantly on the shoulders of corporations, and as well worker rights, including rights of lawsuits and other kind of rights, will be likely expanded. And so, and certain companies that are deemed like oil companies, you know, energy, quote, energy companies, and Amazon are more likely to be in the crosshairs of the more democratic-run government. So Procter & Gamble, which makes such essentials and high-quality brands such as Tide and Crest toothpaste and many others, are at least the least likely to be under the government's crosshairs, and most likely to stay in business because they sell an essential product, and they have category killer products in so many areas. I, you know, what little hair I have, I use a Pantene shampoo. Well, it's a, you know, it's a considered a really top brand. Anyway, I don't want to go there. But in any case, I would encourage you, the first suggestion is consider large employers if stability matters. Now, of course, the largest employer is government. And indeed, if the Democrats do win big in December, there is likely to be more hiring, even if it means more federal debt. And so looking to the government, especially the federal government, because the federal government can always print more money, they're likely to be hiring, and certainly have proven already to be the last bastion of fully benefited, full-time, relatively permanent jobs, quite permanent jobs often, with vacations and the like. And so especially people who tend to listen to KSFP and live in the Bay Area and comport with today's orthodoxies might feel best about working for the government rather than a company. And so for them, trying to get a federal job, especially because they can print more money, but even a state job, government is so many layered. It's state, local, city, county. Then there are these interstitial agencies. And interstitial agencies like, you know, parks commissions and air quality commissions, those tend to be not top of mind for many job seekers. So looking for jobs there might be a source of stability that comports with many, let's just say, progressive values that are so common here in the Bay Area. Next, I think one of the silver linings in the COVID stay-home edicts is that employers, corporations, nonprofits, and government alike are finding that workers can be quite productive at home, and the workers really appreciate it, not having to be in the what was formerly strangling straitjacket traffic or sardined into mass transit. They can work at home. That may ease childcare responsibilities. They're perhaps distracted by coworkers when they don't want to be. And sure, we're all tired of Zoom meetings, but I think corporations are going to be shrinking their downtown offices and maybe even moving their headquarters to where most of their employees live. And so that's going to create an opportunity. All that expensive, big downtown real estate, I believe, is likely, much of it, is going to be converted into housing. The environmental activists and just city planners in general want to see people driving less, and so I would think that they would convert those a lot of downtown office property into small apartments, so that people can shop near where they live. And so I think companies, and I really don't know specifics, but you know, if you're interested enough, you should do that research to find companies that will be converting downtown office space into residential, like apartments. I think that's, you know, nobody has a crystal ball. I like to say that he who lives by the crystal ball eats broken glass, but I think it's a reasonable bet that given the fact that also employers are going to save money, they won't have to have these fancy offices, such big fancy offices, and you've got all this real estate there, and it does comport with environmentalist priorities, I could see it, you know, certainly, even if it doesn't be a big trend, you could be in the vanguard of that, if, especially if you hold those values. If you are involved in real estate or construction or involved in lobbying government or whatever, form a team and see if you, you know, or a group of people to buy a piece of downtown property that may have formerly been office, which may indeed be available relatively cheaply at the right time, and then try to convert it into residential. You could be a pioneer in something that could be a megatrend. What else? There have been recent findings that online education is just not working. And it's not surprising, because while it's convenient, too often the courses are just the portings of standard courses taught by often academics. Academics are normally selected not on how well they teach, how transformational, how inspiring, but how much of their narrow research that they do. So I think we're going to see more online education, because there's ever more dissatisfaction with the cost-benefit of a traditional college education or even graduate degrees. I know so many people who went to medical school or law school and afterwards felt that they really were not practically trained. They were trained too much in theory. My favorite story is a Yale Law School dean was called in the middle of the night. A friend of his who was arrested for a DUI and called him and said, can you get me, bail me out of jail? And the dean of Yale Law School, perhaps the nation's most prestigious, said, I don't know how to do that. He knew everything in the world about constitutional law, but he didn't know how to bail somebody out of jail. So my point is that there's tremendous dissatisfaction with the in-person traditional degree, undergraduate and even graduate. And yet the courses that are taught online are taught by those same professors who are more theoreticians than teaching what is of practical interest and value to people. So I think there's going to be a tremendous need for what I'm calling online education 2.0. Taught classes that are taught online by people with the greatest ability to be transformative, inspiring, and using interactive video simulations that I think are inadequately used. And I think companies that develop state-of-the-art online education will be hiring for the foreseeable future.
You're listening to How to Do Life with Marty Nemko. You can email Dr. Marty Nemko with your comments and questions at mnemko@comcast.net. Or for his articles and books, visit martynemko.com. That's martynemko.com. Now back to How to Do Life.
Another example is intermediate healthcare. Again, many of my assumptions are based on a Democratic win in the fall and likely continued Democratic hegemony in government. And that is going to lead to some form of national healthcare. And so because national healthcare means that everyone is going to be covered, including and covered to the same extent, including many people who have low income and are not going to pay much into the system, there's going to be a tremendous need to control costs. And so much of the work that was previously done by doctors is going to be done by nurse practitioners and physician assistants. We're seeing that already, but it's going to accelerate if we're really trying to fully cover equally, you know, everybody who's paying into the system or not. So another example is going to be physical therapists. Much more of the work is going to be done by physical therapy assistants and physical therapy aides. Anesthesiologists, who are among the highest paid of the medical specialists, much of that work is going to be done by nurse anesthetists and anesthesiology assistants. So my judgment, those of you who are looking for a career, you would be wise to consider what I call intermediate healthcare careers, not doctor, but physician assistant, not physical therapist, but physical therapy assistant. Those pay a middle-class wage and a lot shorter training, and there should be much more demand. Everybody has been fascinated for two decades or more with genomics, more than two decades, with genomics, the promise of gene editing and gene therapy to cure diseases from cancer to depression. That has resulted in an oversupply of PhDs in molecular biology and related fields. So I don't see the job market being good there, but I think there are intermediate jobs that we tend to not think about, whether it be biostatistician or clinical trials manager, more of these intermediate level genomics jobs that are sub, don't require a PhD. Another, again, comporting with my belief that the Democrats are going to win big in the fall, is going to be in immigration, growth in immigration services, whether it be bilingual health providers or bilingual lawyers to deal with legalization, acculturation services, teaching English as a second language, reducing accents, just more and more. There's obviously the illegal immigrants have already have access to education to the same extent as legal people and restaurants and everything else. But I think that the infrastructure, legal access, social services access, medical access, and then, as they use the term, that coming out of the shadows, they'll be more open to optional services like accent reduction and things like that. I see there'll be great growth, if not necessarily in the number of immigrants coming here, although I suspect that probably will increase as well. But even for the existing pool, I think there will be needs for jobs, especially government jobs, that are going to serve that newly legalized or to be legalized, they say path to citizenship for immigrants, illegal immigrants. Of course, then there is going to be, there'll always be a need for offshore proof and outsourcing proof and automation proof careers that are hands-on. And always what comes near the top of most job satisfaction surveys is haircutter. That can't be offshored. People really like it because you succeed with nearly every client. You get have a regular relationship. You see them every 6 weeks or whatever and have conversations. You're working regular hours. You may have to work weekends. But it's considered a very enjoyable occupation. And so a hands-on occupation like that, or a technology installer, whether it be cable installer or ATM repair person or computer network manager, all those hands-on careers, electrician, carpenters, but especially the electronically related ones, are likely to be offshore proof, automation resistant, and they'll be assisted by automation, but they won't replace a lot of jobs. I see that as where, even in an era of COVID, there'll be likely plenty of jobs. Police officers. Police have for decades had a bad reputation as portrayed in the media as a bunch of monsters, or too often monsters. So many people are very reluctant to become police officers, both because of the public image and simply the dangers and the antipathy that many in the public have toward the police. So if you are somebody who's got that ability to remain calm and rational and professional, even in the face of really stressful situations, I think they'll, and clearly you can't offshore police work. If you're comfortable doing that kind of work, I think that will be a career that will pay well with benefits, and there'll be plenty of jobs in my judgment. A couple of temporary ones. These are not careers, but jobs in the, that are simply in the time of COVID. Here in California, the governor is hiring well over 10,000 contact tracers to make calls to people who have tested positive and trying to get in contact with everyone that person has been in contact with. And of course, there's strangers that the person has been in contact with and can't be contacted, but it has been deemed by the public health PhDs that advise our leaders that contact tracing is very important. And so there are thousands of jobs open that they don't pay really well, and they're not going to be permanent, but they're a stopgap if you need money That might be an option. And also timely is the census. We're in the middle of the 2020 census, and there's a certain percentage of the population that doesn't respond to even the multiple mailings saying, please respond, please respond. And by the way, there is no citizenship question, you know, so you can be an illegal alien and you get counted, and that will have profound effects on how resources are allocated in this country. But the point is, if you value making sure that populations that are not likely to respond to surveys like the census, there will be jobs where you will try to track people down by phone, maybe in person. I don't know the specifics, but if you Google census worker, you will find plenty of job opportunities. Again, I think the pay is only 17 to 25 bucks, no benefits, but and part-time. It's a little ironic that government tends to talk about the importance of paying with benefits, but then they're hiring all these census workers part-time, no benefits, but I digress. Anyway, those are my thoughts on where I think the careers that might be viable, even in an era of COVID, might be possible. Anyway, I'm Marty Nemko. This is How to Do Life. I'll be back in a moment.
KSFP and the San Francisco Public Press are supported by listeners like you. Learn more about our membership program and join the public press at sfpublicpress.org/donate. You can make a donation online or send a check to the San Francisco Public Press, 44 Page Street, Suite 504, San Francisco, California, 94102. Thank you, and thanks to the thousands of donors who have made our work possible for 10 years. This is KSFPLP, San Francisco 102.5 FM.
This is Marty Nemko, host of How to Do Life. We have just about 5 minutes. I want to talk about the one other question I got related to careers in the time of COVID, and that is, this question. With millions of people losing their jobs, the job market's terrible. I need a job, but my work history is unlikely to make me the winning candidate against zillions of applicants. Let me tell you my work history. I lost my job as a fundraising assistant, then chose to be a stay-at-home parent and volunteer activist. But my parents are no longer willing to support me. I'm 31, so I need to look for a job. Is it possible to massage my work history so I get a job over all those other people who have a better work history? My first reaction, to be really honest, and it's easier for me to be ethical when I'm just talking and not desperate for a job, but I don't like the word massage. It implies lying or manipulation. I'm going to give you the best advice that I would give to somebody even if they had committed murder and were trying to look for a job. I would try to focus on the positive, move forward, and not try to avoid the conversation focusing on the work history. So I'd be saying something like, I've chosen to be a stay-at-home mom and volunteer activist and feel good about that work, but I'm excited to get back to work, and here are the things I bring to the table, A, B, C, and D. Now, if you just answer and add job ads that way, it's unlikely to work, because you're then competing with a lot more people who've had a more comforting work history. But if you make that pitch to everybody you know, and this is where you have to, in my judgment, really make a real thorough effort. You'd have to make a list of everybody you know who likes you, whether they could hire you or not, because people can refer people to other people. And if you simply tell that story again and again and again, sometimes just doing it by email or text, sometimes by getting together, sometimes by chatting, sometimes by going out for a hike, sometimes by getting high together, whatever. Your chances are greater of getting hired. And a little more granularity. One of the things that can also help is to stay current. Let's say you're not current. You've been a stay-at-home parent or unemployed for a long time, and there's this big gap. And so there's always this feeling like, you know, is this person going to be current? Well, one of the fastest way to get more current and to show that you're more current is to write a white paper, which is the equivalent of a term paper, 2-3 pages, on a topic that would impress your target employer. So if this previous person that whose question I wrote was a fundraising assistant, writing a 2 or 3 page paper on best practices for fundraising in the year 2021, you know, 2020 or 2021, and then, you know, do some reading, do some talking to people, write that 2 or 3 page paper and show that to everybody in your network. Show that to potential employers. That can sometimes compensate for your lack of work experience because it's so current knowledge and that you can write and that you can think. Another thing you want to do is, and I want to stress this again, when your history, work history is bad, you want to project forward. You want to describe in the interviews or even in your cover letters what you might do if hired that would inspire the employer to hire you. Showing enthusiasm. It doesn't have to be hyperactivity, but enthusiasm about the organization, whether it be a company, a nonprofit, whatever, is going to sometimes hold sway often enough, especially if you're choosing some of the careers that are likely to be more in demand, even in the era of COVID that I described earlier in the show, which is probably not a bad idea for me to just summarize again. Most likely to be pockets of opportunity, even in the time of COVID, are large employers, companies that provide the basics, and I gave the example of Procter & Gamble that provides basics like Crest or Tide. Companies that comport with democratic priorities, that is things like illegal immigration. There'll be a lot of services, I believe, in hiring regarding that. Related to national health care, so intermediate health care providers. Online education, next generation online education. I think that's going to be where the future is, not old bricks and mortar or traditional online education. Under the radar genomics jobs that are not being the PhD great scientist, but somebody who is working maybe as a technician who's really an expert at instrumentation or an expert at biostatistics. Hands-on careers like tech installers, that whether it be computer networks or ATMs or low-tech things like hair cutter, police officer, if you have that ability to stay calm and professional, even in the face of great stress. Temporary jobs, COVID contact tracer, census worker. And I actually think that, anyway, I'll stop there. So I think if you stay in those areas and you do and you rely on your network and you stay persistent and you contact them every month or two if you need to see if the situation has changed, asking them to keep their ears out because they're probably going to say no, there's no jobs right now. But if you keep at it and do those techniques like, you know, telling stories about your past successes, talking about what you would do for the future company, writing white papers, I think you've got a shot at prevailing, even with a bad work history and even in the time of COVID. In any event, I want to thank you for listening. I feel like I need to apologize. I've been a little despondent amid all of what's going on with both COVID, the stay at home and the shutdown, the economic shutdown, as well as in the aftermath of the George Floyd killing. So I apologize for being a little downbeat, but anyway, I did the best I could. I hope it was of value to you. Next time I'm planning to do one on self-employment in the era of COVID. In any event, for now, this is Marty Nebko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.
For comments on the show or to consult with Marty Nebko, his email address is mnemko@comcast.net. How to Do Life is produced by Marty Nebko. Post-production, Mel Baker. Music from the Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks for listening.
KSFP and the San Francisco Public Press are supported by listeners like you. Learn more about our membership program and join the public press at sfpublicpress.org/donate. You can make a donation online or send a check to the San Francisco Public Press, 44 Page Street, Suite 504, San Francisco, California, 94102. Thank you, and thanks to the hundreds of other Public Press members who have made our work possible for 10 years.